Okay, so now you're missing a bass guitar player, and I understand you put a notice on the bulletin board at B Sharp Music. What happened?
Got a phone call from a guy named Tim. Tim had just gotten out of the service. I don't know if he had been in Vietnam or not, but he'd just gotten out of the service. He bought a car, a Chevy convertible, a 56 or 57 or 58 Chevy convertible, black. And he just bought a bass guitar, and he's going to learn how to play bass. So he didn't really know how to play bass much at all, other than one or two lessons. And he answered the ad off the board at B Sharp, and so we said, come on over.
This is Tim Millett.
Right.
Okay, so he practices with the band.
And that he wasn't a good fit with the band. I mean, we were all contemporaries, etc., so he wasn't really a good fit, but we needed a bass player, and it really added the sound. You know, when you add that bass, it adds to the rhythm section, and it makes the sound complete. And so I remember we sat around trying to decide on the name for the band, and we finally came up with the name The Illusions, which we thought at the time was a cool name. So then, in the interim, we had another band practice scheduled for the next weekend. And in the interim, Lauren and Owen and I can't remember if I talked to one of you two, too, decided that The Illusions just wasn't a cool name. It was an old-fashioned band name. We needed something with two words, like the Rolling Stones, you know, because we were all becoming enamored with the Rolling Stones. And so we decided that we needed a new name. And so we're going to figure out the name at the next practice. Next practice comes, and we say, we're going to sit and talk about it. And Tim says, no, before you do that, you got to come out and look at my car. Mm. And we go out and look at his car. And in metal adhesive letters on the side of his beautiful Chevy black convertible had printed on there, The Illusions.
Oh, no.
It's all about timing, isn't it?
We looked at each other and
now, Rick, I understand your mother, Ruth, actually played a big role in coming up with the new name.
There was a play on Broadway at the time called High Spirits. She thought that name would be great for the band because we were always in high spirits when we played. We all loved it so much. And that it was a cool name and it had two words. And we liked it because it had the double entendre of High Spirits.
So wait a minute. That's right. So your mom...
In our kitchen.
Yeah.
Wait. When you left the band, we had to pay you $500?
You didn't pay me. But I wanted you to pay me.
What's the interest on
but
that?
But you're back in the band, so it's okay.
I never left.
All right. So speaking of the Rolling Stones, I want to talk to Lauren about your graduation gift, the $5 gift certificate for Powers Department Store. And you were planning to go downtown and buy a record album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Howie Gray's mother gave me a $5 gift certificate for graduation. And I've been waiting to buy Jerry Lee Lewis's Greatest Hits. And so I went downtown. But previously to that, I remember reading a little thing in one of the music magazines about this group called the Rolling Stones that were supposed to be pretty hot. And so anyway, I had that, you know, I had read that. So when I go downtown, on the end cap of the aisle, there's Jerry Lee Lewis's Greatest Hits, and then there's the Rolling Stones album. And I sat there for a little bit, and I went, oh, geez. And I bought the Rolling Stones album. Yeah, and that was great.
You told me once you took it home and you learned every single song on that album.
Every song.
And the second album, 12 by 5, you did the same thing the day it came out.
Yeah, yeah.
Every song that the Stones did.
Everyone.
Every word, every song you knew right away.
Yeah.
And then did you teach the songs to the band members too? Or?
Well, they picked it all up. They just, you know, I didn't have to teach these guys anything. These guys are good musicians.
Well, we did some Rolling Stone songs, but not all of them.
No. I knew them all.
Yeah.
But no, we didn't do them all. We did the Rolling Stones, a lot of Rolling Stones Animals. So.
Which, by the way, I think differentiated the sound from the High Spirits and a lot of the other bands. Because I, you know, first of all, I loved the Chancellors, but they were a lot of deep harmony type of songs, and they, you know, and surf. Yeah. And we came out with this kind of, and much at Lauren's, you know, knowledge of the times of putting this together, we lent more towards blues, towards animals, towards Stones, which was a little bit more visceral in terms of we were a very raw band. And there were a lot of other bands in the Twin Cities that I thought were a hell of a lot better individual players. It, for sure, I'll talk about myself. But I think this rawness that we had when we first played in St. Louis Park High School, I think that was a big that set us apart. And we had a lead singer, like Lauren was saying, that who stood out in front. And that was, we were different.
Three things. Lead singer who stood out in front, one. Two. Fabulous organ keyboard.
And, yeah.
Fabulous. Better than any band in the Twin Cities. Three, most bands who had a keyboard didn't have a rhythm guitarist.
Right.
So we had that.
Right.
We were a six-member band, not a five-member band. And so we had a rhythm section that was always driving, so people always danced to the High Spirits.
Yeah, true.
That's true, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about Rick London and how he became a manager of the band and also booked the band.
Oh, he managed Record Lane, which was previous to the Music Land. The Heilitzers had Record Lane at Norwood Plaza. And he was the manager of the store. That's all I remember. What happened?
Well, he claimed that he could get us gigs.
Yeah.
And we played some sorority or fraternity party.
Oh, was he Phi Up too?
No, but he had some connections to get us. I remember playing at a sorority or a fraternity house when he came on to the scene. But there was also a little problem with that simultaneously. But I don't know if we should talk about that.
What?
Well, like if we were paid $50,
yeah,
the band was dividing up $25.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I caught that early
on.
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
But okay. That was the business. Yeah. And by the way, Record Lane, the Heilitzers had Record Lane stores, but they bought a company out of bankruptcy in Duluth, Minnesota called Music Land. And then when they bought that company out of, they rebranded it Music Land.
But we played a promo gig at Record Lane.
Right.
Yeah, we did.
He arranged.
After our record was
and
released.
And that his downfall from the band was that he thought, he also produced Turn On Your Love Light. He was the record producer.
He thought after that,
Ira wasn't there at all.
Oh, wasn't he?
Not there at all. So that after we did that song, he thought he deserved more money. And so we were giving him 10%, so he wanted X percent more, which meant that he would have been making more than each band member. So we said, no, we didn't think that's a good idea. Instead, you're fired.
Yeah. Right.
So here's the compromise.
Right.
You're out.
We have a new deal for you.
That's right. God, you have a good
because
memory.
Remember, because we added it up.
Yeah.
If he was going to get 20%, you know, that means that we were going to get 16%. Why should he get more than that?
Very common in bands that fired.
I thought Owen said he was getting 50%.
He was giving us. We thought we were getting 25, but we're getting $50 instead.
So let's go to a rather significant event, which I'm assuming would have been the fall of 1964, and this is the High Spirits playing at St. Louis Park for a homecoming dance following a football game. Owen, you want to talk about this?
The only thing I remember, there's a couple of things I remember specifically about that. One of them was that they hadn't really had a band like that play. Now, earlier on, I had seen Kerner, Ray, and Glover play at our school, at St. Louis Park High School. And
the Chancellors played once, too.
And maybe the Chancellors had played. Chancellors were like my big impetus because David Z found a porno film called The Foxy Fireman.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. Oh, but this is how it all comes together. Okay. So you can edit out what you want.
Right,
we're here to disseminate only the truth.
Yes, let's go for it then.
And they were showing it in people's basements.
Okay. Charging a dime a head.
Charging money for it. Telling the parents that we were studying for finals. And they were, oh, well, you kids go downstairs. Oh, very noisy down there. And that's where I met David, that's how I met David. And I wound up back at his house, and he had this amplifier. It was like, it wasn't a Showman or something. Oh, it was a twin reverb. And he had a Fender Jaguar. And I, this was the second coming for me. This was like, I can't even believe that somebody has this. And he was a great impetus for doing it. And he may have had the connection to St. Louis Park. I don't know. It seemed to me that just, all right, so then that night of the dance, I think Lauren will tell you, there was a lot of people that wanted me beat up that all showed up to kind of teach me a lesson for being in the band.
They basically wanted to come and watch you embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
And why would they want that?
Because my clarinet had broken in half during a show when all the families were there. Because I was trying to learn When the Saints Go Marching In, and I couldn't do it, and I got really pissed, and I took my clarinet and I hit it on the bed, but it hit the wire end of the metal end of the bed, and it broke in half, and I was like, what am I going to do now? So my mother had just bought the space age glue, this heavy duty glue, what was super glue used by the astronauts. I don't know why they needed it up there in space for their clarinet, but I put the clarinet back together.
They tested stuff up there.
Yeah, they did. Okay. Long story short is I learned When the Saints Go Marching In. And during one of the shows in 9th or 10th grade or whatever it was, I got up there and I was playing it, and the band leader and all the people are sitting in the cafetorium or whatever it was that they called it. And I was playing and I started the song, and all of a sudden, crack. So people around me, the other woodwind players, started laughing their ass off, and then the whole band had to stop, and I walked up to the band leader with the two. So I was officially a real freaking nerd at that, kind of a dork nerd, whatever, you know. And so my reputation spread, and so the band was, that was my, personally speaking, that was my Carrie moment. You know, in the movie where she comes back. Tim was there, I'm sure.
Tim, that was like the last time that Tim played with us.
But these two guys were in the band.
We had the five of us, sans Beckett Beresford. Tim played bass. And then after that gig, he said, you know, I think I'm going to leave the band. And we all went,
why?
But prior to that, you guys kicked me out of the band.
Well, we said you needed to get your voice up to speed.
No, you kicked me out of the band.
Who? I didn't kick you out of the band.
I was kicked out.
I would think Lauren's perfectly clear on this one.
Yeah, I got kicked out because...
That's when Carl Grusner wanted to beat me up.
Carl Grusner and Bruce Chesney wanted to beat him up at Embers.
It's true, and I remember
and
that.
And I said no.
Not again.
They did. They wanted to beat him up. Because we used to eat at Embers on Excelsior Boulevard all the time.
That was our
And home. We were all there one night, and we... Was a, you know,
I was just constantly getting beat up. It was really a lot of fun back
then. I never suggested they beat him up. They just wanted to beat him up.
So you must have got kicked back into the band.
Well, Tim left. He quit.
Yeah, then something happened. But whatever.
So let's go back to the homecoming dance. How did the band go over that night?
Good.
Oh, my God.
Good.
We were great.
Really good.
It was
really good.
For some reason, again, and I keep going back to this, whatever the chemistry was, you know, it wasn't like, you know, we were not the greatest on the face of the earth, but together,
yeah.
And the chemistry and the way we came together was really, really cool. And we had a big sound. And again, I think it was because it was very raw, visceral, and we had a lead singer, which no one had. And it was my recollection, which probably is not true, but I remember all the girls coming up front and kind of getting the beat up people into the back. And we really went over well that night to where we were constantly asked back.
And people who, I was a very shy person. And people who I never talked to and never talked to me, all of a sudden came up to me and wanted to talk to me that night.
And I went to the head lunch table. Where the cool people sat after that.
So the very next day, you guys were all cool people at St. Louis Park High School.
I think it was pretty instant. I really do.
I think it was that night.
That very night?
That very night.
Wow.
But I was at the U.
You had already graduated.
Yeah.
But you were always kind of popular in your grade.
Yeah. No, I wasn't.
Really?
So Rick Beresford it's only just a few weeks, right, before the first record when you joined the band?
Yeah, it was a little over a month before. I had gotten a call from Owen. We had arranged for me to come to a practice over at Rick London's house. So I went over and met all the guys and played. And like Owen said, it really worked well. And I sang a harmony to just about everything that Cliff sang at the time. And it was just really fun. So
he was the missing link.
He was the missing
link.
He was
harmony with falsetto.
When he joined the band, we stepped it up. We stepped it up a whole another level.
Whose idea was it to go into K-Bank and record a 45?
It was really all of ours.
We all wanted to record.
We were kind of practicing that when you came to Rick's.
Yep.
Because we knew we were going to do that.
First of all, each of the major bands put out a song.
Yeah.
And that brought their popularity up.
Yeah.
Like the Chancellors and Little App and Loopy Lou and Underbeats and blah, 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 blah. And every band played Turn On Your Love Light.
Right.
But we played it a little bit different, a little bit English, a little bit.
We did a white boy garage band cover version of a Bobby Bland blues song.
But because it was so popular, every time we played it, we said, well, let's record that one. You know, it could have been any
song. But I think our arrangement was very cool. I don't know who arranged that, but
me.
It was good.
No, I'm just kidding.
You probably did. It was very cool. It was very cool.
I think it's just the way
it was down tempo.
And this keyboard player just kicked ass on the solo. I mean, that was just a huge part of that.
That was a real defining factor.
Our sound
kicked ass. If you ask people about the High Spirit, what they remember about the High Spirits, they remember the keyboard and the lead singer. That is the memory of the High Spirits. And the rest of us were supporting acts, but we were a good supporting act.
Well, my mom remembered the bass player.
Actually, so did my mom.
And so did my mom.
He's the cute one. He was the Paul McCartney of the group. He was the cute one.
Now, I assume you had the Bobby Bland record, right?
But we didn't do it anything.
We do. You know, totally the Bobby Bland version is very up-tempo.
Yeah.
Turn on the light.
The accents did the Bobby Bland version. The Avantis did a different version. And I liked the way the Avantis did it. So we pretty much took the Avantis deal and change that.
Yeah, it's a total hybrid version.
And the end of it is totally different than anybody's done. Nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
We essentially rewrote it.
Yeah, we did.
Rearranged it.
So this is your very first time in a recording studio, May 7, 1965. Were you nervous?
I don't think so.
We only wondered if we could get it done in 4 hours because that's all the money we had. It was lent to us by his uncle. And at 4 hours and 1 minute, we were out of money.
No chance for retakes at all. You just...
David Rifkin sang on there, too.
Do you remember how much it cost?
$500.
Yeah. Did that include pressing up records, too, or not?
No. The Heilitzers did that.
Now, to tell you the truth, legally, since we paid for the master, which Lauren reminded me of, we, according to law, own that master. So wherever, I know who owns it now. It's owned by a company in Canada.
All
that stuff is owned.
Really?
It was all the Heilitzer stuff. But we do technically own that. We could go get a letter and demand it, but we'd have to have proof that we paid for it, which...
Yeah.
Don't have the receipt.
And I'll tell you why. I tried to buy that label from the guy in Canada. And the deal that I had, he was selling it and I was brokering the deal. And my thing was that if I could successfully sell it, but this guy was kind of a crook, if I could successfully sell it, he would give me that master.
Music business. Figure.
A couple of your friends, I understand, just happened to stop by the studio. Who were they and what did they end up doing?
My brother, Gary, older brother, and David Rifkin. And then in the studio, we had problems with the harmony, and both of them ended up singing harmony back up on the song.
On Love Light.
On Love Light.
Not on the, they're not on the flip side.
No.
Okay. How did they do on
Must have been okay. We got to number two.
No, we were down to number one.
In Kansas City.
No, in the Twin Cities,
no,
we were number one.
Two and four in the Twin Cities.
We never made it to
number
two
and four.
We just never made it there for some reason.
We were two on like WDGY and four on KDWB.
Yeah. I have the.
Do you remember that thing
list.
That?
I have the song list.
But then there was that one list where when we did the last reunion and that Care 11 thing was filmed, it said we shot by Sonny and Cher and we shot by the Rolling Stones to go to number one.
We never made number one here. We never did.
I quit.
So just for the record, who's all singing background on Lovelight?
Rifkin?
Well, Rick. I mean, Rick was the main, you know.
Rick Beresford.
Right.
Rifkin and Gary Levinson. Yeah.
And Jay?
Gary sang on that song?
Jay? In fact, if you listen to it, you can definitely hear Gary in there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Before the bridge.
Yeah.
What about you, Jay?
No, I did not.
You're not on background?
No, I didn't start singing background until...
Oh.
Sometime later.
All right. So in the summer of 65, the High Spirits first 45 is released on the Soma label. And the record is played. Is it played both on Ouija and KDW?
Yep.
Yeah. And no, KDWB? I think one stage. I think.
Started on WDGY.
No, because we brought it out. We brought it out to WDGY and played it. And we had girls hired to call over and over again and request that song. That much I remember.
They weren't hired. They were girlfriends.
Yeah. And we just kept saying, if you hear the record, keep calling and use different voices.
I remember, actually, the song broke the end of the spring.
I first heard it.
Just like in May. In the end of the spring. And I remember WDGY used to have the instant top 10 of the night from call-ins. And that, I don't know if it's because we rigged it or not. But
we rigged
it. All of a sudden... like three nights in a row, number one on the instant top 10 of the night.